Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. Here's a tip, listeners. Don't fuck with Rob Zombie. My home state native last week posted a pic with our favorite queens of metal, Baby Metal. And almost instantly, the butthurt elitists came a-trolling about. They started whining about how Zombie had sold out, and that Sue, Yui, and Moe weren't real metal. Yeah, and Apocalyptica are just a classical band. And the comments just got downright nasty. I usually read them because I don't believe in censorship, but I have too much respect for Baby Metal and Zombie to do that. But fortunately, Rob Zombie isn't the type of guy who'd ignore such crassness, so he started putting the haters in their place. One by one, he started calling them out for the little shits that they were, and the world watched in awe. Zombie came out triumphantly as a rock and roll hero, and Baby Metal were delivered a truck-filled load more of respect from the metal community. Hopefully, that respect transformed into some more record sales for them. But good on Rob Zombie for sticking up for those gals. Great metal acts should stick together. Incidentally, Baby Metal also took a pic with Alice Cooper, and no one bashed him for doing so. Because Alice would murder them, plain and simple. Anyways, it's nice to open up the show with some positivity, but let's get going on this week's playlist. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start things off with some Detroit 7, and this comes off of their 2006 album, Great Romantic. It's called Kono Itoshiki Sakai.
Yeah. From the Black Stones album, that was Anasujo with Kuroi Namida, one of the end themes for the 2006 anime series Nana. Its 10th anniversary is coming up later this year, so fingers crossed that it's celebrated in a big way. Maybe they can actually finish animating the series like a good show should. And today, I'm being joined by one of the members over at Bloomy Light Studio, who last week launched a Kickstarter for their debut game, Lin in the Spirits of In-Ao. It's a gorgeous-looking platformer that'll have fans of the likes of Studio Ghibli and Bones tuning their heads in wonder. Please welcome Kaline Torari.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for having us here.
Not a problem. So, tell us a little bit about Bloomy Light Studio. How was it founded?
Well, the studio was founded in June 2013 by David Tollery. And it is a French independent video game. And it is based in Aix-en-Provence, which is a lovely little city in the south of France.
Cool.
The team consists of, passionate gamers and manga enthusiasts and who've been influenced by, you know, all the greatest figures of Japanese animation and games from the 1990s. Well, the studio works relentlessly to try to deliver quality productions with sort of a unique and immersive visual identity so that, players could enjoy great gaming experiences.
Very cool. So you first teased Lin in the Spirits of In-Ao a couple years ago with a very short trailer. Now, how has the concept and the game evolved since that time?
Well, actually, the game has evolved a lot in the last couple of years. We really focused on the night-day gameplay cycle, and to integrate it with the backgrounds. So the structure of the game was consolidated and in terms of content. So, for example, levels, characters, quests. And then we worked on all of the interactive elements for the day-night cycle. So, for example, by day, you will get plants that look like little platforms, but then at night, they will become things that actually stop the player from progressing, blocking the way.
So you have to switch back and forth, like at the click of a button of sorts.
Yes, exactly. So you actually, the gamer will have to switch quite a lot if they want to, finish the levels, but also discover all of the hidden places.
That sounds really awesome. So, what is the story of Lin in the Spirits of In-Ao? Like, who is Lin, and why is the weight of the world placed upon her shoulder in this game?
Well, Lin is actually a character who was inspired by, famous heroes like Luffy from One Piece or, Sailor Moon from older animes. She's quite young. She's only 17 years old. And she is the apprentice of the high priestess in the village of In-Ao. She's a bit clumsy, but she's actually a very kind person. And she can be very courageous when it's needed. However, she's not actually on her own. She also has a sidekick with her. He's called Aku. And he's a little demon that she meets at the beginning of her adventure. He's not exactly social, and he likes to complain a lot, but he does have a good heart, and he likes to laugh and crack jokes, but he can also be courageous whenever it's needed.
I was about to say, with a name like Aku, the very first thing that I'm sure listeners will come to mind is like the villain from Samurai Jack, but odds are this guy is like the complete total opposite of that guy.
Yeah. He's adorable. I mean, like I said, he's not always in the best mood. He tends to be a little bit skeptical about everything, but he's actually a nice character.
So he's kind of like an anti-psychic of sorts. Because I've seen pictures of him, he kind of seems like the more of the lazier type that kind of has his arm twisted to do stuff.
Yeah. Lin is really the one who's trying to get things done, and he's always sort of trying to convince her to go back and just let go of everything. But he also serves as a guide for the player, so sort of explaining what are the game mechanics and things like that. In a way, I mean, he might remind the players of Navi from the Zelda games.
Oh, right, yeah. I can kind of see that.
Otherwise, well, the story of the game. So the game takes place on the small island of Inao. And so everything used to be fine, and humans and spirits and gods used to live in perfect harmony, until one day, for some reason, we don't really know why, but some spirits started attacking the humans. And so the high priestess, who's in charge of that kind of problem, decides to organize a ritual to solve the problem, but it actually goes very wrong, and she gets badly injured. So the only person who's left who can communicate with both spirits and humans is Lin. And this is why, well, the weight of, well, at least the island is placed on her shoulders.
Well, the weight of her world specifically, then.
Yes.
So you've spoken about being influenced by the works of Hayao Miyazaki and other Japanese directors. So how did that influence shape the ideas of Lin and the spirits of Inao? And how did you transform those inspirations into your own unique concoctions?
Well, we always loved Hayao Miyazaki movies, and, you know, more generally speaking, Ghibli movies such as, well, Spirited Away or Princess Mononoke or My Neighbor Totoro. But more generally, we actually feel like the game was inspired by Japanese folklore and myths. And so, for example, all of those spirits or monsters they have actually existed in Japan for centuries now. I mean, you can actually trace it back to the Edo period in, you know, lots of paintings and things like that. So, I mean, although it does have a strong, you know, Miyazaki vibe, it's not just that. It's a bit of other things too. And also, we feel that, you know, the game has its own style in a way.
Cool. So gameplay-wise, what can players expect when they jump into Lin and the Spirits of Inao?
Well, we like to think it's a mix between Zelda, Ocarina of Time, you know, for the structure and the exploration system, and Muramasa, the Demon Blade, for the 2D genre and also the sort of very Japanese-style universe.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Muramasa, the Demon Blade. That was the one on the Wii, correct?
Yes, exactly. And, well, I mean, Muramasa is a bit more Japanese than we are, and also a big difference is that, well, because you play a kind of, you know, samurai, you're actually killing people most of the time, so it's a very different sort of state of mind.
Right, because in this game you don't kill, you more purify. Is that the correct word to say?
Yes, exactly. That's the idea. Well, the idea is actually to help the spirits and sort of help get, you know, achieve a balance between the humans and the spirits again, the two worlds. So, you know, we're trying to aim for something that's like that has sort of like nicer ethics in a way.
Very cool. It's good to have a more of a positive aspect when it comes to like the spirit world, especially with those from traditional Japanese and Shinto mythology.
Yes, that's true. And also the whole idea that it's, you know, everything around you is sort of can actually come to life. Like a lot of the spirits in the game are actually, they actually look like objects, and which is also very sort of reminiscent of the Shinto mindset or religion. Mm.
Besides the main campaign of the story, there's going to be a lot of side quests, and I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners, like, what are these side quests going to entail?
We can't say too much about it, but in most of the side quests, well, you'll have, obviously, you know, very interesting rewards that will be very helpful to continue the main story. But it will also be the occasion to discover new characters and or learn a bit more about their backstories. And also to discover new areas and go on, you know, sort of specific adventures and fight new monsters, that kind of thing.
So you are currently raising the funds for Lin and the Spirits of Inao on Kickstarter. So what made you decide to use that crowdfunding route, and what did Kickstarter offer that the others couldn't?
Well, actually, in France, raising funds is actually very difficult. So that's why we thought, you know, it would be quite natural for, you know, to go to a crowdfunding system. Then we chose Kickstarter because it seemed, well, we felt like it was the most popular platform, and also it's quite universal too.
Currently, as we're on the set right now, you're about 50% away from the goal right now. If you find yourselves reaching the goal and going forth and reaching more funds than you thought you were going to make. How do you plan to expand on Lynn and the Spirits of the Now?
Well, if we can actually, you know, go beyond the goal, that would be fantastic. We actually have lots of ideas. Some of them are, well, we'd like to have a PS4 version as well as an Xbox One one. And we're also planning on adding a lot of content, you know, and animation, which would make the game a lot more interactive and more immersive for the players.
Very cool. So for my final question, why should our listeners back Lynn and the Spirits of the Now this very moment?
We think that Lynn and the Spirits of Innau is unique because it proposes sort of quality visuals with a hand-drawn graphic style and an intuitive gameplay. And it also has original and efficient mechanics, we think. Moreover, like we said earlier, it has a very strong moral aspect, so you don't kill your enemies, you actually help them. And there is also a very strong presence of nature and balance and those kinds of ideas. So that's why, you know, even when Lynn is fighting an enraged spirit, she's always doing something good and she's not sowing destruction.
Corinne, I want to let you know right now, I'm on your Kickstarter page this very moment. And at this very moment, I just pledged.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And I'm inviting my listeners, please do the very same. Go on to Kickstarter and please back Lynn in the Spirits of Innau. It looks like it's going to be a very beautiful game. Corinne, where can our listeners find out more information on both Lynn and the Spirits of Innau and Bloomy Light Studio?
You can find lots of information on the game and the studio on the Kickstarter page, really. We tried to put as many information as possible on it. So, you know, please go and take a look. And it's a bit, you know, the page is quite big, but, you know, please go through it and I hope you'll enjoy it.
Awesome. Corinne, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. And I wish you nothing but success on the Kickstarter for Lynn in the Spirits of Innau.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me.
Not a problem. Coming up is one of my favorite French punk rock bands, Second Sex. And although no one knows what they've been up to since their debut album, Petite Mort, they, in my opinion, left a good mark on me and hopefully on the French punk rock scene. From Petite Mort, this song is called Dimo Qui Je Suis.
Tu es par terre, elle s'est
From their 2007 compilation album, Best of Mook, that was, of course, Mook, with Namanaki Yume. This past November, the band released a new live DVD entitled Fuck the Past, Fuck the Future on World, Paradise from Trendy. In a move that shocked everyone in the gaming world, Disney announced that it was discontinuing all Disney Infinity production, closing Avalanche Software, and shutting down Disney Interactive entirely. That one sentence alone has a lot to digest, I know. Now, as I sit here pondering about this news, I keep trying to figure out what exactly went wrong. We've seen this whole toy-based gaming subgenre being very successful with Activision's Skylanders, LEGO Dimensions, and Nintendo's Amiibo figures. But with Disney, this is what's puzzling me. The dynasty of Mickey Mouse has been around longer than Mario and Spyro combined, so success should have been a no-brainer. Yet, here we are with Disney Infinity totally canceled. Has the House of Mouse been overshadowed? I remember reading the book Game Over many years ago and how Mario was seen as more of a recognizable mascot than Mickey was, and I have a little bit of a feeling that this is still the case. But, you know, Infinity was always super popular. Every time I went to E3, lines were always long to play it, although this was also due to the limited edition figurine they give out each year, but still, people played it like crazy. Could maybe the older gamers, and maybe even the parents, have put their foot down and said that enough is enough with the interactive toys? Like I said, we've got three other toy-based video games that people are all playing at the moment. So someone had to have been pushed onto the cutting room floor. One other thing that comes to mind is the fact that the Disney Infinity figurines only worked with Disney Infinity, and no effort was placed into expanding this to other games. Now, as an example, look at Amiibo, whose figurines work with Mario Kart 8, Smash Brothers, Pokken Tournament, Splatoon, Super Mario Maker, Fire Emblem Fates, Star Fox Zero, and a bunch more. And you got to do so much with Amiibo, like unlocking levels, finding hidden gems, costumes, saving your fighter's stats, whereas the Disney Infinity figures, you just tapped and summoned characters. It's kind of lackluster if you think about it. So, perhaps the problem with Disney Infinity was that it had a shiny outer body with a rather hollow center. And if Disney Interactive had done more to extend the figures' lives outside of the core game, then perhaps they wouldn't have stopped producing Disney Infinity, shut down Avalanche Software, and closed shop of their entire gaming subsidiary. Makes you wonder, number one, if these financial troubles were the reason they themselves didn't publish Star Wars Battlefront, and two, What's it become of the likes of Kingdom Hearts or even the Epic Mickey franchises? Now, odds are the former will be fine under Square Enix's watch, but I'm not too sure what I can say of the state of the latter. Incidentally, I should point out that Disney's Avalanche Software is not the same as Avalanche Studios, the guys who made Just Cause in the recent Mad Max game. I thought the same thing myself, but I did a little detective work before I recorded. Still, I hope these developers will find new jobs very soon, or maybe they can start their own indie studios. Whichever comes first. At the very least, it's still really sad that Disney Infinity has been just outright canceled, a great studio being shut down, and an entire sector of one of the biggest and most recognizable companies of the world is just now gone. It's really sad. It's really sad. It makes you think, who's going to be next on the chopping block? No one's going to know. Probably not until like the end of this year, or maybe even next year, where we're going to see some more of these bigger companies making some really hasty cuts. But right now, let's go back to the playlist and spin a bit of a Dizzy track from Japanese rockers Triceratops. This was a B-side from their Future Folder single, and it was originally in the classic Peter Pan. Here's the second star to the right. You can fly, you can fly, you can fly. And to you developers out there who have just been sacked, I hope you do fly towards some greatness in the not too distant future.
The second star to the right shines in the night for you, to tell you that the dreams you plan really can come true. The second star to the right shines with a light so rare, and if it's Neverland you need, its light will be there. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, so you know where you are, gleaming in the skies above, lead us to the land we dream of. And when our journey through, each time we say, that little star that shines, the second from the right. Think of a wonderful thought, any merry little thought. Think of Christmas, think of snow, sleigh bells, so if you go like reindeer in the sky, you can fly, you can fly, you can fly. Think of the happiest things, it's the same as having wings. Take the path that moonbeams make, if the moon is still awake, you see him wink his eye. You can fly, you can fly, you can fly, you can fly, you can fly.
hits you right in the heart every single time. From their 2009 self-titled debut album, that was Spinneret with Cupid, fronted by Mrs. Josh Homme herself, Brody Dale. A couple years ago, Brody unleashed a great little solo album entitled Diploid Love. It's definitely worth checking out. I hate to say it, but I'm getting really sick of Nintendo of America censoring their games before they get released onto our shores. First, we had the issue with certain Fatal Frame costumes being eliminated, and then the same occurred with the release of Xenoblade Chronicles X. We then had our buddies Phil, the Issues Guy, and Andrew of Wicked Anime on earlier this year to talk about the whole Fire Emblem Fates fiasco, and we don't have to go into that again to know how bad that was. And now, once again, another game is being cut up before its American release. Tokyo Mirage Sessions FE, the big Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem sort of crossover game. It appears that one of their DLC modes that was in the Japanese release is being left out of the American release, and it's known as the Hot Springs DLC. All it is are just some costumes, specifically swimsuits, that certain characters can wear throughout the game. Swimsuits. Not something risque, like bath towels, that you'd wear in an actual hot spring. Because you get naked in an actual hot spring. True fact, I speak from experience. And here's the thing. It claims that Nintendo took it out so they could get a T rating and not a mature one. Swimsuits have never equaled M rating. If that were the case, then every Olympic-based video game with a swimming mode would have an M rating, and some of those swimsuits competitors wear can be rather revealing and, bulgy, if you get what I'm saying. So, there should be no reason for Nintendo of America to be taking this out of their game. But they did. And now, the release of Tokyo Mirage Sessions FE is getting some controversy thrown their way because they didn't just release the game as is. And by the way, no one would have made such a big fucking deal about swimsuit costumes to begin with. Nintendo, you know that I love you, but for all that is sacred and holy, you guys need to take a cue from Xseed Games. Notice how all their games that come out here from Japan, like Onichanbara and Senran Kagura, the latter of which have been published on your 3DS completely uncut, and nobody bats an eye. Because they know their audience, and the audience counts on them to release their games as they were in Japan, fully translated. And they kick ass every single time, especially with the recent Senran Kagura Escival Versus, which we gave 5 stars for. And if you listeners don't have that on either PS4 or Vita, then you're missing out on one of the most fun games of the year. Look, all I'm saying is keep your games the same as they were in the native country of its origin. Let characters wear swimsuits, let us pet our Fire Emblem characters, and stop trying to take out experiencing something fun or unique. It's very simple. Please. Sorry, but I'm done with censorship in gaming. Do whatever the fuck you want in video games, so long as it's not gross. And if you want to know what I consider gross, read up on Eric Kelly's review of Shiny Days on the B3 site and see what sort of ick they got out of the domestic release. Let's just say there's only so much a sister should love a brother. And I'm going to stop myself right there and return to this week's playlist before I go down a really, really, really dark area. How about something a little more lighthearted? We've got Bradio, and this comes off of one of our favorite records of last year, Power of Life. It sure as hell ain't the taste of vanilla, no. This is chocolate flavor. We'll be right back.
次こそは俺の番つもりじゃない理性が薄れてやばい戻れない数分前の他人には Tell me why 遅い指に絡ませて一つずつ君をほどいてゆくチョコレートフレーバーのハーモニー君とも
We'll be right back.
collaboration between Shoko Nakagawa and J-pop group Denpagume, that was Punchline, the opening theme to the anime series of the same name that aired last year. Just a couple weeks ago, a Punchline video game was released in Japan for PS4 and Vita, featuring alternate endings that differ from the anime, and I'm really crossing my fingers that we get a domestic release of that one. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, on Anime Amino at KingBabyDuckESH, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/OmMysteryInc. Like us on Facebook.com/BostonBastardBrigade and on Facebook.com/LandOfEsh. And do not forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Nerd Crave, Smashed Rook, and The Structure Network. My thanks once again to Kalim Torare of Bloomy Light Studio for coming on to talk about their upcoming debut title, Lin, in the Spirit of Inao. Please go to Kickstarter, donate however much you'd like, and help make this game a reality. Something tells me that big things are bound to happen for them if they're successful. We're going to end the show with some AC/DC for your troubles, and as some may know, Guns N' Roses frontman Axl Rose will be taking over vocal duties on their current tour, as Brian Johnson has come down with a bad case of tinnitus, or rather, he's already replaced them as we speak. Wear those earplugs, musicians, they'll come in handy in the long run. This is the title track from their 1981 album, and it's called For Those About to Rock, We Salute You. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck Evan Borgo, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.